Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Near the end of 2022, Katz management resigned. Brent Cagle, who was busy running the airport as its director, was asked to step in. He did, and has been interim CEO of Katz ever since. To put it bluntly, he inherited a mess. The system was plagued with bus delays, a shortage of drivers, concern over driver safety and passenger safety, ridership that had declined and never recovered from the pandemic, and Blue Line train cars that had never been serviced. Ever. Cagle embraced the challenge and is now getting ready for a new one, the potential expansion of the system should the General Assembly allow a referendum on a 1 cent sales tax increase to finance that expansion, and if the voters then agree. But the plan has changed several times since its inception, and there are currently four different scenarios on the table. About a year ago, we got an update on where Katz was in the process of their reinvention, and this hour we get another one. Katz interim CEO Brent Cagle is back with us for the hour. Welcome back. Thank you for being here. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Mike. Thank you for having me.
Let me start with something that WFAE Steve Harrison has been reporting this morning, that the transit system has now abandoned the idea of an underground bus station uptown. It's been pushing for this for several years now as the best option for passengers. And you now say that street level is the best option for passengers. Why the change in plans here?
Yeah, so I think stepping back to before I came in, certainly Katz and the city was excited about the partnership, the P3 partnership, to not only rebuild the transit center, which desperately needs to be renovated, rehabilitated, redone, but also to have private development on that same property above. I think all of those decisions were great decisions at the time, but what really changed probably about a year ago now is two fundamental things about the finances of that project changed. One, the cost of the project was estimated to increase by at least $20 million. And two, the city had always anticipated asking the county to participate in an approximately $20 million tax increment grant, a TIG. The county at the MTC meetings about a year ago said, look, that was not something that they were interested in participating in. It's not something that the city had ever floated with them, and that, you know, as far as they were concerned, there was no commitment from the county on that. So that really changed fundamentally the financial capital program to do that project. It increased cost by $20 million. It decreased the anticipated TIG by $20 million. So the project became $40 million to the bad financially.
So was it mostly money, the money consideration, or was it also partly due to the fact that the Hornets have decided to build their practice facility on another piece of land and not be part of this project?
Yeah, so the Hornets and the practice facility was always about the private development. What I would say is for us, for the below grade underground bus facility, it was really the dollars associated with our side of the facility, the public facility. Now, I said this to Steve last week, and I'll say it to you now. You know, all things being equal, it is always better to have a transit facility at grade. It's easier for operators. The facility itself is easier to maintain air quality, all of those things. And so while it's absolutely possible, and there are many transit facilities that are below grade that are very successful, all things being equal, it is preferable to have an at-grade transit facility.
You're in agreement with what former Cats CEO Ron Tober has been saying since the very beginning, that the underground bus stations are a bad idea. You're saying they're a bad idea because they're more expensive than the at grade, because there was also, I think, a thought of putting it above street level, so they'd be driving up and that you could walk beneath it, or there'd be buildings beneath it. Is it simply because of the money, or is it simply because now you've been in charge for several years and you've helped them see the light?
Well, I will say when the money changed is when we said, look, we need to rethink this. This deal was a great deal as it was envisioned, but when that money changed and $40 million is a significant amount of money on one project, on this project. And so that's when we really reevaluated it. And I think the fundamental truth has always been the same. All things being equal, at grade is better.
But that's not.
But
But that's not
the
what. That's not what Katz has been saying. Katz officials, and I'm not who. Sure, these are anonymous officials. I'm not sure who these people are. But it says Katz officials keep saying keeping it at grade or street level would not work. Now suddenly it does.
Well, I'm not sure who said it wouldn't work. I guess we have a 25-year track record of it working perfectly fine at grade. So I'm not sure who said it wouldn't work. But I think we have a long history of showing that it absolutely does work and can work at grade.
So there are a lot of things going on with cats that I want to get into, but before we do that, I'm going to ask you again what I ask you every time you come on this program, and that is you ran the airport for several years very successfully. It's the seventh busiest airport in the world. You took on these cats challenges, and the system was deeply challenged, deeply troubled when you came in to take over. And evidently, you've done some things to right the ship, and I'll ask you whether or not you think you've completed those projects, and then ask you why you don't think you're the right job for the job, the right guy for the job permanently, because you like this interim title.
I guess what I would say is going back to do I think everything is fixed? I think we are far better off today than we were 2 years ago. And we continue to make improvements every day. And I'm excited about those. I am really excited about turning the corner. I think somewhere in my 2 years, I'm not sure exactly where I turned from just constantly fighting fires and trying to fix things that were clearly broken or had been neglected to really starting to think strategically about the future. And that's a really exciting place to be. So I'm loving that. To your second question of the interim title, I'm comfortable with the interim title. I'm certainly not advocating that it be changed, but I'll never say never. And we'll see what the future brings as far as my career path. But I will say the last 2 years in Cats have been challenging, but also really fulfilling as well.
Because some have speculated that perhaps you're staying in that interim position and not advocating for permanent, and maybe they don't want you to because they don't know what Katz is going to be when it grows up yet, and they won't know until we pass this referendum for the 1 cent sales tax, which will fundamentally change what Katz is today. Are they waiting to see what happens to then decide who should run it?
Yeah, I think so. Not trying to put words in the mouth of the they who are making those decisions. That seems reasonable to me. Clearly, if the General Assembly gives the voters of Mecklenburg County the ability to decide, and the sales tax referendum is successful, Katz will become an independent authority. It will no longer be part of the city of Charlotte. And quite frankly, that is important organizationally. And I think that better clarity on that would be important as the new transit authority or the current MTC thinks about a permanent CEO for the future.
I want you to take us as we go through the hour through these four proposals that Katz is considering for what we'll actually be voting on if we get a chance to vote on these. But before we talk about that, I want to talk about that things that are in our immediate future, because early next month there are improvements coming to Katz bus routes, 10 routes to be exact. What's in the works?
Yeah, so we definitely have we always so we make changes to the bus routes or the bus system 3 times a year. So this is coming up in February. It's our routine changes. Some of those changes are just optimizing routes. The biggest change, and this is important and exciting, is microtransit will be rolled out in the 3 northern towns, Davidson, Cornelius, and Huntersville. With the anticipation that should the sales tax referendum be successful, we would continue rolling out microtransit across the entire county.
We
And
we've talked about
it's
mic we
exciting.
we've talked about microtransit in the past, but for those people who didn't hear those programs, what explain it? What exactly is it? How does it work?
Yeah, I know time is of the essence. We don't have all day to talk, so I'll explain it this way. Think about it as public transit, so it's affordable, $2.20 per ride, acting almost like Uber and Lyft. You schedule your ride, the car or smaller vehicle comes directly to your home and takes you to where you want to go within the zone. And so it's often described as an Uber or Lyft type of service. What it really does is fill the gap in that first and last mile for areas that are less densely populated, where quite frankly, fixed route bus service, traditional bus service, just is not very effective.
So, in the presence of Uber and Lyft and taxi cabs, why do we need this?
Yeah, it's affordable. It $2.20 a ride. And which is significantly lower than you will find out there in any of the private providers.
As we've alluded to many thousands of times on this program and already this morning, Katz and the city are hoping to get permission to put a referendum on the ballot in November to fund the expansion of Katz using one of four scenarios that we'll be talking about for the rest of the hour. But first, we've known we need the General Assembly's permission to put that on a ballot in November. And we've known that since the very beginning of this process, almost a decade ago. Last year, we found out that legislative leaders who are leading the charge in Raleigh didn't like our plan. They said it was too rail-centric, didn't focus enough on roads, which are what people use. But it was just last week that Katz revealed revised plans, taking those criticisms into account, four plans to be exact. And now you are seeking citizen input on those plans before the Metropolitan Transit Commission votes on which one to send to Raleigh. Did I get all of that right? Is that the background?
That's the background. That's right.
So since we've known about the need for funding for years, and we knew last year that the General Assembly didn't like our plan, if we hope to get the General Assembly's permission, we needed to toe the line a little bit. And we know that time is of the essence because the November ballot is not far away, and it has to go through the General Assembly, and that takes time. Why have we waited so long to present these four plans and to get them? The whole process seems to be incredibly long and with no urgency until the very last second, and then suddenly it has to be done yesterday.
Well, I'll agree with you on one of your points. This process, developing the transit system plan, has been a long process with lots of public engagement from elected officials. It's a 20-year process, so it has been very, very long. I think what changed for us, a couple things last year. One, the General Assembly, they made it clear that while I don't know that they disagreed with the plan, other than to say they did not think that the plan did enough for roads.
Let me stop you for a second. We'll come back to that answer because we have to take a break. Brent Cagle is with us. He is the CEO of CATS, the interim CEO of CATS, and we will continue in a moment. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte. Using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on Listener Funded 90.7 WFAE and WFAE.org. I'm Mike Collins. Brent Cagle is with us. He's the interim Cats CEO. He's been in that position for several years trying to right the ship from serious problems that he inherited, and now trying to guide the system through what may be an expansion of Cats if we are given the permission to put a one-cent sales tax referendum on the ballot in November, and if voters say yes. And we were talking just before the break about this lengthy process that seems to have gone on forever about getting this plan together and getting it in a shape to present to the legislature, and now time is of the essence. So you were in the middle of answering that and taking a
step. Yeah, what the General Assembly really said was, you know, I don't know that they dislike the plan or like the plan. What they said is the plan did not put enough or any emphasis on roads, and roads are important to mobility. Clearly, they're right. And so the town managers, the county manager, they came together hearing that conversation or feedback from the General Assembly, and they came up with proposed legislation. And that proposed legislation was approved via resolution by all members of the MTC but one, Matthews. And it really sets out 40% of the new sales tax to be designated for roads. And that road money does not go to a future transit authority. That goes directly to each local jurisdiction, to Cornelius and Huntersville, to Matthews and Pineville. And really, that revenue is annual. And that annual revenue is approximately 15% of total revenues for each of those towns. And so it's significant. It provides a lot of opportunities for all of us in the county to make improvements to roads that are much needed. Now, the other 60% of the sales tax, 40% of it could be used for rail, but no more than 40%. And 20% then would be used for, let's say, non-rail or bus. And we understood that. We came to understand this draft legislation and its approval by resolution about the middle of last year. So that really started the conversation. Then in, let's say, the fall, we knew that we needed to make updates to the financial model, because as we think about the transit plan, we now have a better idea of what resources or money is available. And so we had to update the financial model, and that took us till we basically unveiled that on January 22nd at the MTC meeting. And we unveiled the scenarios that we see as viable scenarios that are fiscally constrained or financially feasible.
There are four plans, and the four plans submitted for consideration differ greatly from the original plan, which called, if everybody recalls, for five rail lines to crisscross the county. They even differ from a recent plan that called for the Silver Line to go from Belmont and Gaston County to Matthews with the stop near the airport. And we have been told repeatedly that we cannot build roads fast enough to avoid the kind of congestion we will face in the future with continued growth. The five rail lines might have alleviated some of that congestion and certainly would have acted as a catalyst for development, if the blue line is any example. All four of these proposed lines are 30-year plans. That means it will take 30 years to build them out. 30 years from now, Charlotte will be very different from what it is today. When it's done, will you have accomplished anything?
Absolutely. So let me start by saying every plan that we put forward, whether it's the you know, all four, represent significant improvements and enhancements to transit, not just after 30 years, but immediately. Better Bus is part of the transit system plan. And the beauty of Better Bus, not only do 60% of our riders use bus, so the majority of our riders use bus, but isn't
that because the bus goes places and the blue line only goes two places?
Well, that's fundamentally true everywhere and will continue to be true. You can't serve the entire population of a county with rapid transit only. Bus is always the backbone of every transit system everywhere. And those improvements can be implemented almost immediately, but they would be fully implemented in the next 5 years or
So
after passage of the new revenue.
we are asking for an increase in the sales tax of 1 cent, I guess, for 30 years. How would this work? Would seriously, I keep referring to it as a 1% sales tax, but it's not 1%. It's 1 cent. How does that work? Would they just tack a penny onto everything you buy?
It would be just like the existing sales tax. So there is already a half cent sales tax dedicated to transit. And it would be, how it's collected would be the exact same as all sales taxes currently in the county.
And this will obviously require other sources of funding. It will not all come from this 1 cent sales tax if we are granted permission to levy that tax. What are those other sources, and have they been confirmed? Have they been lined up and firmed up, and they're ready to go?
Yeah, the primary other source is well, there's the existing half cent that does not go away, but the other primary source are federal grant dollars. And in general, we assume between 40 and 50% federal participation on these large projects.
Do you think that will not change under the current administration? They seem to be changing a lot of things and wanting to throw everything back to the states.
That's true. But what we know is it's sort of timeless investing in infrastructure. And so these programs, they may change. Some of the specific priorities associated with programs may change, but the programs we believe will survive. And it's always a good bet to invest in infrastructure, which is really what this plan does.
So all four of these different scenarios, these different plans, put the Red Line commuter train first. That is the train that will go from Charlotte's Gateway Station to Mount Morn in the northern part of Mecklenburg County. After years of asking, begging, pleading with Norfolk Southern to give us permission to put this train on their freight tracks, suddenly Norfolk Southern said, "Okay, well, you can have them. You can buy them." And buy them we did. We paid $74 million last year to buy those tracks. We own them, all 22 miles of them. What happens if we don't get permission to put a sales tax referendum on the ballot? We just keep the tracks?
Yeah, I guess I'll answer it this way. It took us 20 years to have the opportunity. When the opportunity comes, you take it. And we are betting on the future of Charlotte, and we know that the Red Line is important, and always has been an important element of the transit system plan.
So we've paid $74 million for the tracks. We added some extra money into the pot to pay for the building of the Gateway Station, which is a terminal that the train will reach when it comes to Charlotte. But you're also proposing $1.38 billion for the Red Line. What's that money for? Just the trains?
The $1.38 billion is inclusive of the land. And so it includes the cost that you just talked about, but it also it's building stations and track improvements to allow for commuter rail to operate efficiently and effectively along the corridor.
So, if we get permission to levy this tax, and if the voters say yes to it, how quickly will work begin on the Red Line, and how quickly will the train start running?
Yeah, so the total project from start to finish is estimated at between 8 and 10 years for completion.
WFAE Steve Harrison, who reports extensively on transit and has done so for years now, did an analysis that shows that the toll lanes on I-77 North, since they opened, it would actually take less time to drive using those toll lanes from, say, Davidson to Uptown and vice versa than it would to take the train. Has that altered anybody's enthusiasm about commuter rail?
No, I think so. There's a couple things to remember about rail. Number one, public transit is always cheaper than private toll roads. Those tolls can be quite high. I'll tell you, Mike, I live in the northern part of the county, and sometimes when I'm using the toll road, I'm a little shocked at how much I just paid to get to work. The Red Line is public transit and will be much more affordable. The other thing about rail is it's really infinitely scalable, right? As one train car gets full, you add another. Roads are not. They get full over time, and then you have to add a new lane, and that becomes a problem. So I do think that the Red Line, it has a comparable running time as the toll lanes do today, but it is also a much more affordable and reliable corridor because it's rail.
So let's talk about the Silver Line. The removal of the original route from Belmont to Matthews has taken the place of the Red Line as a sore point in this transit plan. People in the northern part of the county were adamant about getting rail because they've been paying that sales tax for transit and, in their view, got nothing for it for all these years. Now they're getting the Red Line. But Matthews wanted the Silver Line, and they're not going to get it. They're not happy about this. What do you envision? There are four different scenarios, and the way the Silver Line is now envisioned is different. So, how do you see this line working if it doesn't go to Matthews and Belmont? What is it? It's just like a spur? What is it?
Yes, yeah, so the original plan did not go to Belmont. It stopped just past the airport, but it did go all the way to CPCC Levene in Matthews. What I would say is, of the plans or scenarios that we put forward on the 22nd, scenario one preserves rail. It is really the 2030 plan. What changed with it was how quickly we can build it. And so, in effect, we know that we can't build everything at once in rail. So scenario one says, let's preserve rail, but you have to build it in smaller chunks. And so that's exactly what scenario one does. It preserves rail, but it means that you have to rely on future extensions to get the full alignment served.
Scenario one would have the Silver Line train run from the airport or near the airport to the old Coliseum and Ovens Auditorium, with the possibility of future extensions both to the east and to the west. If it's built out, airport to Coliseum, how do you see it being used?
Yeah, it would be used so the same way that we had always envisioned. There would be folks using the Red Line to come down and connect onto the Silver Line to get to the airport. You'd have folks from the east side using the Silver Line to come uptown or when they're traveling. You'd also have airport employees utilizing the Silver Line. So none of that changes. Now, what we would do if that is the choice, is to rely on future expansions, we will enhance existing bus service between Matthews and the Coliseum or the existing terminus point, wherever that is, so that the bus system better feeds into the rail system that is built.
And the second scenario has the Silver Line running from the airport to 11th Street, which it would terminate, I guess, near or at the junction with the Blue Line, and add for or take into account possible future rail expansion and planned bus rapid transit from Gateway Station to CPCC's Levene campus in Matthews. Again, how do you see that being used in that configuration?
Yes, yeah, so a little note here, maybe transit nerd kind of stuff. The reason 11th Street is important on that scenario is because the Silver Line East is all BRT. So we always think about the middle point of the Silver Line as Charlotte Gateway Station. If we are only doing rail to the west, we need the western alignment to hook into the Blue Line so that we can have interchangeable fleet and we can use the existing maintenance facilities. So that's the only reason that 11th Street is designated in that scenario.
So
Now,
will
how it
either.
would work, oh, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Yeah, so how it would work is, you would have a rapid transit corridor to be defined, but generally using the same corridor that the Silver Line has already looked at, going all the way from Matthews to Uptown Gateway Station, where those passengers can either get off for their jobs in Uptown, or they would transfer then onto the Silver Line rail to go on out to the airport.
Will either of these configurations, the first two, which have the Silver Line as a train for a part of the route, will they help commuters? Will they reduce congestion? Will they act as a development tool? What do you see as the fundamental result of this of realizing either of these two scenarios?
Yeah, I think the simple answer is yes to everything you said. We know that these rapid transit corridors, the corridors are already known transit-centric corridors. This is where we have transit riders. And so that's why they are the corridors. And having better service, enhanced service, whether it's BRT, bus rapid transit, or light rail, will enhance experience for all of the riders and for new riders as well. So yes, it helps to enhance experience, increase ridership, decrease congestion, sustainability goals, right? It takes private vehicles off the road, and it is a convenient and fast or rapid transit service to help people get to where they need to go.
Well, let's talk about rapid because the third and fourth scenarios on the Silver Line scrap the train altogether and they replace it entirely with bus rapid transit from I-485 to CPCC's Levine campus. That eliminates, I think I'm right about this, correct me if I'm wrong, that eliminates Uptown. It eliminates the airport. It doesn't intersect with the Blue Line. If that's the option we choose, will we end up with an easy to take, get you where you want to go when you want to go there system?
So scenario three and four, when you talk about the Silver Line being all BRT, that is not correct.
Okay.
That it would not serve the same. It will serve the exact same corridor. It will serve the airport. It will serve Matthews and Uptown, all points in between. That corridor, whether it's bus rapid transit or light rail, it will serve the same basic activity centers in our speak. We call them activity centers and connect the populations along those lines with those activity centers.
As you know, Matthews Mayor John Higdon wants no part of this. He says bus rapid transit doesn't work anywhere in the country where it's been tried. Is he wrong? I have 30 seconds.
The short answer is bus rapid transit is less known in the US, but it certainly works well in the US and across the world.
So when we come back, I want to get a little definition because people don't know what bus rapid transit is. See how it works in your opinion. And then we'll talk about the bus system expansion and streetcar expansion, which are also part of the new proposals that we'll be looking at in the coming days before we take it to the legislature. It's Charlotte Talks. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, incorporating Mazda's customer-centric vehicle design by making the customer the center of business to create a better car buying experience. More at mazdaofsouthcharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Brent Cagle, interim CEO of CATS, is our guest, and we're talking about the four scenarios that were presented last week by the Metro or to the Metropolitan Transit Commission about the future of Charlotte Transit and what it may look like if we get permission to put a 1 cent sales tax for transit on the November ballot. It has to go to Raleigh. They have to decide that. Then it has to come to you, the voter, to decide that. And we're going through the four scenarios that you are being asked for feedback on before all this is decided on and sent to Raleigh. For those who don't understand the difference between the bus and bus rapid transit, what is it?
So bus rapid transit, there are certain principles that must be followed or adhered to that turn bus into bus rapid transit. Some of those things are one, at least some dedicated lanes for the bus. So they're not just traveling in general traffic, that there are bus lanes that are dedicated for the bus rapid transit line. Other technology things are signal prioritization. So when those vehicles approach a stoplight, they get prioritized on the green. They get to go first. Those are some of the technology things. Here are some of the things that I think people take for granted. A traditional bus, to board the bus, you have to You have to climb stairs. You walk up the stairs. And so if you're an ADA customer or those kinds of things, the bus has to sit and stop, put down a ramp, bring the passenger on board. A bus rapid transit vehicle is what we call level boarding. So you walk straight onto the vehicle, no stairs from the platform, just like you would in a light rail vehicle. And that creates a significant improvement in the running time of the vehicle. The other thing that people take for granted, one of the slowest parts about regular bus service is the fare box. Everyone who gets on stops at the fare box, pays their fare, and then they go sit down and they take their ride. That doesn't happen on rapid transit, on light rail. You pay off board. You buy your ticket before you get onto the vehicle. Bus rapid transit also incorporates that. So whether it's through technology, whether it's through bus lanes, whether it's through specialized vehicles, everything about BRT is designed to make that rapid, not just traditional bus service.
In addition to bus rapid transit, this money from this sales tax would go to expanding and improving regular bus service. We've been tinkering with bus service for years, going from a spoke and hub and spoke system to a more direct route across town system. What would this expansion look like? How would it be different?
Yeah, so what it would really do, it would increase our service by 50%. Our top 15 bus routes today account for 60% of our total bus traffic. All of those routes would go to 15-minute or better frequencies. No route in the system beyond those top 15 would have frequencies above 30 minutes. We have routes today that are 60-minute frequencies. It would also, we hear over and over, what people want in bus is they want frequency, they want reliability, they want amenities or bus shelters, and they want safety. Those are all reasonable things to ask for, right? To expect as our customers. It would also bring 2,000 new bus shelters into the system so that people can have that better experience. So we're talking about reliability, frequency, amenities, all of those things that we hear are important to our customers.
Transit's a hard sell for some people, and ridership was down nationwide in transit systems across the country during the pandemic and recovered very slowly. And I believe Charlotte is behind the curve in their recovery. It looks, however, that we'll end up being about 10% higher in ridership for 2024 than we were for 2023. And according to CATS, bus reliability has gone way up. Do the two go hand in hand? Ridership improves when people can depend on it.
Oh yeah, absolutely. The worst thing to do is rely on the bus, and the bus is not reliable. It's just not there. When I started, we were looking at missed trips. That's basically when a bus just doesn't come, about 10 percent of the time. That is below 1% today.
So, to be clear, overall ridership is still just 64% of what it was before the pandemic and only 53% of what it was at its peak in 2013. And when you presented these four scenarios to Metropolitan Transit Commission that we're talking about, I don't believe that you attached ridership projections to any of them. Why not? Isn't that important information for them to have to make their decision about what to send to Raleigh?
Yeah, it is important, but remember what we were doing in January is we were taking the approved transit system plan, which all of these things are approved already, and we were looking at how we make the approved plan, which is not financially feasible, how we make that plan financially feasible. And so that's what the focus of January was, and that's what the scenarios focus on, because our transit system plan has never been what we call fiscally constrained. And so that's what we did in January.
So, speaking of ridership, ridership projections for the Gold Line streetcar have never met their goals and expectations. Certainly, the streetcar has been plagued by problems like people parking in the right of way and the streetcar can't get around, etc. But the streetcar, if I'm not mistaken, is still free to ride, and yet people aren't riding it. It is increasing. Ridership is increasing. But when the second phase opened in 2021, Katz projected 4,100 passenger trips each weekday. Recently, it just hit 2,000 weekday trips. If people aren't riding it, why are there four scenarios in which we are expanding it?
Yeah, so let me talk first about the Gold Line. There's a learning curve with the Gold Line. We did have folks who were parking in the right of way and blocking the train. That occurs much less frequently today. So the other thing we were struggling with was having enough frequency. At one point, that frequency on the Gold Line was every 30 minutes. That is too slow. It is down to 20 minutes, and we would like to take it to 10 minutes. Again, as we've brought it down to 20 minutes, last month we saw a 40% increase in ridership in the Gold Line. I think it's taken time for us to figure out how to be more efficient and effective with that service, but we're seeing the riders come. But you are correct, it is still below the anticipated or projected numbers. Now, why is the Gold Line included? Because it is part of the approved transit system plan. Both Gold Line extension to the west down the Bates Ford Road corridor and Gold Line extension to the east out to Eastland. I'll also point out that when you look at our bus service, the number 9 is the Central Avenue route. That is the single largest bus route. It constitutes 10% of total bus ridership in the system. And the number 7 is the Bates Ford. It is the second largest bus route in the system. It constitutes 5% of total bus ridership. And the Gold Line would serve that same corridor. And so that's why it's identified as a rapid transit corridor. And the reason it was included in our scenarios is because it is an approved part of the transit system plan.
It's going to cost 840, it's budgeted to cost $845 million to expand the streetcar by 6 miles. And as you know, Matthews is upset about not getting the Silver Line train. What would $845 million buy us in terms of expanding the Silver Line to Matthews?
Yeah, here's the simple answer, and I'm going to answer it a little bit differently. It will not get us to Matthews. The problem, I guess, $840 million is a lot of money. Everyone can see that and knows that. But when we're talking about order of magnitude compared to the other projects, the Gold Line itself is the absolute smallest project in the bunch. And so, again, what it doesn't do in some of the scenarios, for example, we do the Blue Line to Pineville, but then future extension to Ballantyne. Cutting the Gold Line, if we were to consider that, and we don't think we should, would not get you to Ballantyne. It will not get you to Matthews because the dollars just don't line up.
You conducted an online survey in December and January asking people which train lines they wanted. Expanding the streetcar was near the bottom of the survey's results, but when Katz made a presentation to the Metropolitan Transit Commission last week, it didn't release those results. Why? Because they already knew it, or were there other reasons?
We did release those results and they've been reported on. We provided them to the Metropolitan Transit Commission as part of the packet. We did not present them, but we provided all of that information and we provided it to the media and subsequently it has been reported.
So if it is low on the list of priorities in terms of the people who took your survey, who are presumably citizens, is it that they don't understand the importance of this to the system? Is it that they don't really want to ride it? They don't care about it one way or the other? Or did the wrong people living in the wrong place answer the survey?
Well, I think it's a little bit of everything. I think that number one, there was a lot of conversation before the survey about the Silver Line. So clearly that awareness rose for folks who are thinking about the Silver Line, whereas it might not have on the Gold Line. But what I would say is, I don't know that people said that the Gold Line shouldn't be completed. I think what the survey really said was, in the order of priorities, what are your top priorities? And so it's not that I don't think anyone actually said, don't do the gold line. They just gave priorities. And in a rank order list, something's got to be first and something's got to be at the bottom.
I want to remind people that before the blue line was even started, it was derided high and wide by lots of people as a boondoggle, and it's turned out to be anything but. It is the poster boy for transit build out and what it means for both riders, commuters, and development. And each of the proposals that you've put forth call for an expansion of the blue line. Scenario one would take it south to Pineville and leave the door open for possible future expansion. Scenario two would do the same. Scenario three would take the blue line south to Ballantyne, as you've alluded to. But scenario four would expand that route from Pineville to Ballantyne using bus rapid transit. I heard no discussions of those proposals, especially the BRT expansion to Ballantyne, outside of what maybe you presented to the council. What have you heard about that suggestion? Are people in Ballantyne at all interested in bus rapid transit?
Yeah, I think over the last 20 years, what we have heard consistently from the community and from elected officials is we want rail. So that's a tough question. Are people interested in BRT? Well, we know over the last 20 years, people have said we want rail, and that has been very consistent, and it drove a rail-centric plan. So what the real question we're asking is it more important to start rail knowing that it has to be built gradually over time? Because once you start rail, you can always expand it, just like we did with the blue line. Or is it more important to serve the entire corridor as quickly as possible? And if the answer is we want to serve the entire corridor, then we have to start considering BRT because we do not have enough funding to do all of the corridors in all rail.
So all of these four plans came about because Raleigh is skeptical of our original plan, and the new ratio is 40% of the money going toward rail, 40% of the money going toward roads, 20% for buses. In your mind, is that the correct ratio?
You know, more money is always great. In my mind, mobility does involve roads as well as transit. So I think that what we've put together is a plan using the 40-40-20 split that provides road enhancements, traditional bus enhancement, and rapid transit enhancement across the entire county. I'll say again, all of these scenarios are enhancements. It's a win for transit and roads in Mecklenburg County.
Even if Raleigh says yes, you can put this referendum on the ballot in November. Voters may say no. They said no to the Uptown Arena. They said no to the arts funding proposal the city put forth several years ago, resoundingly. What happens if they say no?
Yeah, we understand. We start to analyze why they said no, and we learn from that experience. What I think, though, is unlike arts or arenas, transit is critical to the community. We hear that over and over. Roads are critical to the community. So I don't know. You know, I don't know. People will vote their conscience, and I don't know if that'll be a yes or a no, but I think when it comes to transit and roads, this is critical for our community as we continue to grow.
Do you think you're selling that? Because it seems to me that you're going to get one shot at this. If they say no, I don't think you're going to come back on the next election cycle and do it again, right?
Well, we certainly want this to pass first time around.
Of the four proposals, do you have a dog in the race? Do you care which one passes? Which one do you think would be best for the city, knowing what you know about transit and transportation?
So, Mike, I've been in the public sector and worked with the community and others long enough to know that I will never give you my opinion on that. What I will say is all four of those scenarios are great scenarios. It's just about trade-offs and choices.
And you have said it creates these plans create trade-offs from day one, may not be able to, will not be able to serve the entire identified corridor. And House and Senate leaders are responsible for some of this because they made you change the plan. Are we having discussions with them about these four plans right now? Or is this just going to come as a package one day and they'll say yes or no over time?
Quickly. So I'm not part of the delegation talking to the General Assembly. I assume so.
Brett Cagle is the interim CEO of CATS, who has his hands full. He's herding the cats, believe me. Thank you for the hour. Appreciate it.
Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. Our executive producer is Gabe Altieri. The senior producer is Sarah D'Elia. We have production help from Gene Davis, Chris Jones, and Jesse Steinmetz. For information on Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or subscribe to the Charlotte Talks podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks. Additional support for WFAE programming comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at mazdaofsouthcharlotte.com.